Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path.
I think if you had to pull like what has been the biggest aha moments of people that have gone to How to Charge Life, I would have to believe getting up on a whiteboard and having that conversation and adding value in a different way has created some of, at least for me, some of the best meeting experiences.
Wild to me that like by the end of day two, these like epiphany moments of like, wait, maybe a great advisor takes something complicated and makes it simple. And maybe every great advisor has to be a great communicator in order to build trust and move people to action.
You have like 20, 30 year vets who have, by all measures, fantastic practices, been doing it a long time. And they realize for the first time, they actually can't explain what they do very simply.
In this episode of the podcast, we're going to talk to Austin Harris. We had the privilege of doing a private Edward Jones event in my office for How to Charge Life, where we teach advisors how to communicate their value, how to build financial plans, how to add an extra layer of income to your practice, that your time and ideas have value. So Austin came, we filled the room. This is his second event he's been to for How to Charge Life. So having Austin on to talk about what did he take away from the first event, how did he go home and apply it, and then even coming back, what lessons were further reinforced about how good of a communicator is he, how does he communicate his value, how does he prospect. So I appreciate Austin coming on today to give you kind of an inside look of an advisor that's been to How to Charge Live, not once, but twice. Austin, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, happy to be here, Sten.
Hey, man, so we were able to just hang out a few weeks ago. We had a full-on Edward Jones private event downstairs in my office, which was a great time. We've also been to another event we did before. I've hung out with you in the community, so we've known each other for a little while, but I love bringing advisors on that have, you know, unique experiences. You know, love for you to share what Edward Jones is doing and how you're adapting it to your practice. But before we jump into that, I'd love to hit on how did you get into the business? What attracted you to the business? And then we'll kind of unpack your story.
Yeah. So I came right out of college, 22 years old, just over 10 years ago. And I was in personal fitness, personal training before. And so what's interesting about the business is it's so similar, right? Working one-on-one, accomplishing goals, holding clients' hands through the process. Unfortunately, Sten, in personal training and fitness, there's not much money to be made, and it's a short-lived career, a lot of burnout. And so I met a financial advisor and described what I want to do with my life, build a business, you know, kind of work for myself, work with people. And he said, hey, you should look at becoming a financial advisor. And at the time, I didn't know what a stock was. Like I grew up poor, was not around money. And so the idea of finance never crossed my mind until that statement. And long story short, here we are today, 10 years later.
Did you start with Edward Jones?
I did. Yeah, came out of college. I studied franchise marketing, at least in my undergrad. And I love the concept of entrepreneurship, right? Where you can take a perfect model, go out and replicate it. And so I got a job at a fitness franchise where we looked for really good operators, entrepreneurs that could take our system, go to a new city, replicate it, and become successful. And so I didn't go far from the undergrad degree. And so I looked for how do I become a financial advisor, find a model that's done kind of in a box, and I could take that and I could go plug and play. And if the only limiting factor was my ability to work hard, like, let's go. And so that is what attracted me to Edward Jones right out of college.
Yeah. I wonder what, because I know as I bounced around the industry, there was always these stories I'd hear about like, oh, that place is really great. Hey, that place is not. Hey, this place does that. And some of that bad information in my career caused me to like jump around, and I had to experience it firsthand. I was like, oh, that's not really what they said. And fortunately, I started in a big insurance broker dealer where there was actually some training and guidance. But very quickly, I heard people be like, no, you got to go independent. It's all like start your own RIA. And I think that did a little harm to me in a way, because it was like, well, I tried to take on things too soon. And what I've seen now from working with a lot of Edward Jones advisors is, I think the Edward Jones I knew of maybe 15 years ago by rumor, and then there's kind of where it's going and what it is now. So I'd love your perspective from an inside of like, how do big shops, obviously they're so big, they can get in the way of themselves at times, but then the value that they bring to your practice.
Yeah, I think about the industry over the last 50 years, right? Go back to the 60s, 70s, 80s. Our job as, quote, financial advisors was strictly selling product. And you were access to capital markets, right? So if somebody wanted to buy a stock in the 60s and 70s, they had to call their broker to go buy a stock. And I think true for every large firm, that was how they got in the business, was transactional-based business, helping their clients get access to capital markets. And like every other company, like the industry's evolved dramatically the last few decades from, you know, just pure product sales to holistic advice and guidance. And so, again, not unlike every other firm, we have moved to where our clients are demanding more advice, more guidance over more areas of their life, to where now, you know, Edward Jones is launching financial planning along with many other firms in the industry. And I think being right out of college when I was 22, what I needed was a really good structure, really good processes, where if you would just tell me what to do and how to do it, I'd go run through a brick wall and get it done. And that was especially true when right after I started, I got married, and then my wife got pregnant with our first child. And then she said, hey, I really want to stay at home with our kids. And I was still pretty new in the business. And it was one of those fight or flight moments where I was like, either I've got to figure out how to grow a successful practice that can put food on the bills and allow my wife to stay home, or I've got to go find something else to do.
Yeah.
And there's nothing else I wanted to do. So we had to go figure it out. And the structure, the processes, the systems, the tools, the resources, the mentorship that existed within the firm, I think is what allowed me and propelled the success.
Yeah. So give me some insight into your kind of development journey as an advisor. So came in Edward Jones right away. Obviously, there's structure, guidance there. You know, since I've known you, it's like Austin gets after it. You know, that's the version I've been able to experience. Was there a version early on where you're like, I'm kind of just copying people around me? And then at some point you woke up and you're like, I think I'm on the long path. And then you switched something. What was that like?
There's no doubt, right? So I think true for everybody, when they start, you go find a mentor, maybe somebody who's successful, and you're like, how did you do it? And whatever you did, I'm going to do. And depending on who you ask, you're going to get a variety of areas you could go down, right? You might meet somebody who was very successful with maybe business owners. And if that's all you're told and you know, you're going to go that path. Or you might meet somebody who was very successful with physicians at a local hospital. And they're like, hey, if you just focus on physicians, you too will be successful. I think the mentors that I ran across were very general practitioners, very good, you know, kind of quote, salespeople. I realized about year two in that I needed something to help young Austin be successful. And I thought it was the CFP. I was like, man, I need a designation. I need something to help me with credibility. So I went and got my CFP early on in the business. And it was somewhere during that CFP journey that I realized what I wanted to do was help comprehensively with my clients. It wasn't that I wanted to get one thing done for a client and then move on and find more clients. Like, no, I want to find a client. I want to serve them really, really, really well. Mm-hmm. And what was eye-opening was what I did not know before I went down that designation path. And that led to additional designations and more education and going back to college. So that I could become a really good practitioner. I always told myself, like, I want to be the best financial advisor, because if somebody sits down across from me and I think there's better people that can help them, wouldn't it be my job to then say, well, you should probably go see somebody who's better? So I was like, I need to be the best person to help my clients.
Yeah.
And so that my mind has shifted dramatically from year one of like, how do I just go find clients, to how do I serve them really well?
Nice. Raise your hand if you've ever been to a financial advisor event that didn't really change you. Maybe the speakers were interesting, maybe you had a few good conversations, but when you got home, nothing about your business actually improved. I've been to a lot of these events over the years. Events full of inspiration, but short on practical strategies you can actually use. The advisor of the future knows how to clearly communicate their value, prospect with intention, and deliver financial planning advice clients actually understand. That's why we built How to Charge Live. This isn't an event built around hype or theory. It's an event built for advisors by advisors. 1,000 advisors have attended How to Charge Live, including advisors with more than 20 years of business experience. And over, we hear the same thing. This is the best advisor event I've ever attended. I want to personally invite you to join me at my office in Franklin, Tennessee this October for 2 days focused on helping you build more valuable business. I'm going to walk you through my entire process, how to communicate your value well, how to add value through fee-based financial planning, and how to create a framework to help you scale your business faster. Seats are limited, so visit howtochargelive.com to secure your seat now. So you've been to our How to Charge Live event twice now. I'd love some insight, like your first experience, what kind of hit, and then coming back to the event. How helpful was the introduction to ideas, training, some time to apply it, and then coming back?
So I think there's a point in everybody's career, and maybe it's just head trash we always deal with, where you struggle to connect your value and the fees you're charging, right? And, yeah. And I find myself always wondering, am I worth what I want to charge or what I do charge? And so I heard you on a podcast years ago, maybe your first time on Kitsis, talking about this connection of, hey, you're worth what you charge, probably worth more, yeah. And your time and ideas have value. And it's when I was starting to try to figure out how do I charge for financial planning? How do I get into this world that I don't necessarily know? But how do I become confident in communicating my value to clients and prospective clients? So that's why I came originally a couple of years ago.
Because you weren't able to charge for planning the first time you came, right?
That's correct. I believed there was a version that was coming where I couldn't do that. But I had no idea how I'd even approach it. So I was like, hey, you know what? Let's go to How to Charge Live. Let's learn how to do it. And if I can't do it right away, that's fine. I'm sure I'll take away something. And I certainly did.
And then you had the break. What was after the first time you came, what did you implement, try? Because you weren't really fully unleashed to get paid for it yet. But what adjustments did you make just based on the concepts and ideas we unpacked?
Everything from resetting how we talk about centers of influence to our idea partners, you know, making sure I executed on. We made a list in How to Charge Live. Who are the idea partners you need in your practice to be successful? I made that list. I made sure that, you know, one example is somebody who does P&C insurance, you know, is part of financial planning now. That is a big component of what we do for clients, but I can't be the expert in everything. I need those partners. So that was one thing I took away. The biggest was communication on a whiteboard in real time with clients. I think that was my first aha moment of, holy cow, here's how you actually communicate value. Like, you get out of your chair, you get on a whiteboard, and A, you make things very simple for clients to understand, and B, you show and you quantify the value on a whiteboard. And so just that live workshopping with other advisors, getting uncomfortable, and then go back to your office and say, okay, now I've got to practice and get really good, and I've got to send my videos to the team or my friends or to my buddy Mark Bell, who's there with me. And it's just been an ever-growing thing of how do I continue to whiteboard what I do for my clients and get better at it.
Yeah. Yeah, the more I get to hang out with other advisors and teach these ideas and the How to Charge Lives, we've run into firms where I've spoke at their conferences where they're not quite allowed to do it yet, or they're kind of rolling it out slowly. And the more I do it, the more convicted I am. It's like the main goal is not to get to charge. Like, obviously getting paid for your time ideas is important, but every single thing we've teach in our event is the thing that every advisor should be doing, even if you choose not to charge for it. Be a great communicator, have better ideas, you know how to tell somebody you meet for the first time how you add value in what you do that actually compels them to ask you questions. Like those, I think, are just fundamental skills. And then the good news is, like, you should charge for it if somebody's willing to pay you for it. So I think in the past, the idea for that event, I was like, and how do I help advisors just get paid more so they can be less stressed sooner, versus, hey, become this type of advisor and people actually come and ask you to pay you for what you do.
Yeah, no doubt. I think I call it a communication class. I came back a second time. It was very similar content. It was cool being with a bunch of advisors from my firm who are in similar situations. We run similar practices. A lot is changing, not only in the industry, right, with technology, with, you know, do you grow a big team? Do you stay small? Do you charge for claim? There's a lot of decisions you have to make as a practitioner. And a lot of us are on our own in our offices, in our silos. And that event for me, the second time, was a way to get around like-minded people in the same room.
Yeah.
Who were at the same firm, which was really cool. And I think a little unique for your How to Charge Live workshop. But now we've taken that back and we have an ongoing little mastermind chat.
Nice.
And we're celebrating successes and sharing ideas. And so that's going to be a really cool group moving forward, I think.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that inspired us to say, okay, we're going to try to do that for other companies. Because, yeah, I think to your point, you get 30 advisors from the same firm. There was collaboration. You were able to chime in and be like, hey, I hear that, but here's how I would address it. So it was a different energy than we've experienced at times when it's like, hey, everyone in here is facing the same, you know, obstacles, whether it's like, hey, there's some compliance complaints, or, hey, no, these are the tools I'm using that are already approved. And it was fun to do it for a company specific event. So we'll keep doing that.
Yeah, we loved it. And now there's chatter about it from other colleagues. So I hope, you know, we can do another one and have another group from our firm down. And I think many firms should be doing the same thing.
Yeah. How are you approaching, because I'm seeing this in a lot of different firms where financial planning is being rolled out, but it's like a slow roll. It's like, hey, you can do it, but the fee can only be this much. Hey, you can do it, but the engagement has to be this long. Hey, you can do it, but only if you produce this much will we then approve you. Hey, you can do it, but only if you have a CFP. How are you handling, like, I want to unleash the full power of Austin and his team, but I'm not able to do it fully yet?
It's a good question. I think what I want to do for clients today, I can do. But I think there will always, whether you're an independent or you're a large firm, there's always constraints. Maybe it's the finances to get the tools and technology you need to be able to offer in your practice. Maybe it's that you're segmenting the clientele. Maybe they don't necessarily have a need for financial planning. Maybe there's very simple W-2 employees or something. You know, I find for a lot of people where I have that conversation, it's mainly head trash or excuses of why I can't just go do it, right? Within the framework of what you can do today, go do it. But we'll use a basic example. If my firm says I can only charge X dollars and I can only use this tool and it has to be this length of engagement, I either say, okay, I'm going to do it within that framework and get really, really good at it, or I'm not going to do it and hope it gets better down the road. And then when it does get better, I haven't been practicing getting good within the current framework. So I view it as whatever I can do within my framework, I should be doing. A, because it's good for my clients.
Yeah.
B, because it's what else am I going to do? Just not do it. And so, sure, maybe I would want to charge a lot more. Or I'd want more tools and technology. But I believe a really good financial plan can be done on a piece of paper. And so we can argue about tools and technology and pricing, but whatever the framework you have, like that's where you are. So utilize it to the full potential, but don't let it be an excuse for why you can't do something.
As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources.
This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Yeah, I appreciated the conversation that came up at the event with all the Edward Jones advisors of, I feel the tension at times of like, oh, this is going to be this big project. It's going to require a bunch of work. And I think what we reinforced at the event, and you encouraged your fellow Edward Jones advisors, is like, no, there's a very efficient way of this. Like, keep doing what you're doing, but there's a way to add a new wrapper, a new energy around how you communicate financial planning and your value. You don't have to hire somebody tomorrow, create all these big templates, you know, buy five more tools. It's like, no, you just start talking about what you do differently and start training people to see it as like, oh no, a financial plan is actually six categories: cash flow, investment planning, retirement, tax, risk management, and estate. You know, I find most advisors focus mainly on risk management and investments, which is important. But, and so just the language we practice in there, I see these little light bulbs go off to where it's like, oh, that's just a language shift. But that small shift allows me to be more accepted by the marketplace because they're already coming to the meeting like, are you going to try to sell me something? Do you have insurance or do you have investments? Like, can we just cut to the chase? But when you come at them with something like that and you teach them something first, the interactions are totally different.
Yeah, I think when you get up on a whiteboard, when you can explain what you do and that you have a process behind it, especially for prospective clients who either don't know what to expect or their previous experience has been they went in the office, they were sold this big product and they didn't know what to do. They didn't know what they were buying, and that's been their experience. When they walk in your office and you get up on a whiteboard and you're explaining your process and you're adding value before they ever become clients, it's a different energy in the office. Until somebody gets on a whiteboard and does it, it's so hard to explain and articulate. And I think if you had to pull like what has been the biggest aha moments of people that have gone to How to Charge Life, I would have to believe getting up on a whiteboard and having that conversation and adding value in a different way has created some of the best meeting experiences I've ever experienced in my 10 years.
Oh, hands down. Yeah. And what I think through the events, you know, there's three popping in my mind now that, you know, the one we got to do together and a couple others we've done recently. The difference between day one versus day two, that, I mean, we'll have some studs. Like, by every measure, they've arrived, making a bunch of money. They've been in the business for 35 years. You put them on a whiteboard and I say, hey, would you explain to me a financial plan in 90 seconds or less? And they can't do it. Or I said, advisor, and we'd workshop this live at the event, hey, tell me what you do for a living. And most of the answers are not that great. And it's wild to me that, like, by the end of day two, these like epiphany moments of like, wait, maybe a great advisor takes something complicated and makes it simple. Hey, maybe every great advisor has to be a great communicator in order to build trust and move people to action. And so you mentioned it, but I think there's so much of this that's like, is this mainly a communication event? And we do get really practical. Here's how you build a plan. Here's how you, you know, set expectations with a proposal. Like, that stuff's important. But man, there's something about dynamic communication skills that not only do you get to a whiteboard, but when you stand up, it actually looks like you like what you're doing. And you say something, everybody gives me a hard time when I say this because I say it a lot. Like, I stand up and I'll be like, hey, you're going to love this. Because like, oh, okay. Like, how about we exceed a client's expectations in a meeting by bringing an energy they don't expect?
Yeah, I love the what do you do question and How to Charge Live. Again, you have like 20, 30 year vets who have, by all measures, fantastic practices, been doing it a long time. And they realize for the first time, they actually can't explain what they do very simply. Or you give the list of things you should probably be able to quantify on a whiteboard or illustrate on a whiteboard in 90 seconds. And you're like, man, I've been doing this for clients for 25 years. But I don't know that I could actually explain it very easily on a whiteboard.
Yeah.
And then what I ask myself is, if I can't do that, do my clients actually understand what I've been saying to them for the last 10 years?
Yeah. So
I better go get better to make sure I'm a good communicator, because if my clients don't understand it, I'm just another one of those, I don't have bad experiences, but not ideal experiences.
Yeah, I think what I've learned, one from doing it with clients, but two hanging out with other advisors and, you know, getting the active feedback on it, is I think a gift we can give to clients is a framework to reference back to a lot. And if when somebody meets with you, you just ask a bunch of questions and then you say, hey, I can manage your money better, let's transfer it. Or, hey, I think we can improve your insurance policy, let's throw you an underwriting and hope it works out. Is that if on the first time you ever meet a prospect, you say, hey, if I never see you again, I want to explain to you what I think a full financial plan looks like. And you get on the whiteboard or you're on Zoom and you whiteboard the categories out to them, like, you've just given them a gift, because I bet no other advisor has ever said a full financial plan is actually these six things. I think it usually is like, let's bypass the coaching and education and let's get down to like finding a problem and solving it as quickly as we can. And so if you add into your meeting like a 20-minute slot of like, hey, let me just set expectations about how we see planning. If I never see you again, let me give you some gifts on the whiteboard. I think it changes the relationship. You've just set it up for success as opposed to just being another average advisor.
It does. I always wonder, you know, we all have prospective clients who may interview multiple firms at the same time, right? And you're like, hey, I'm coming to see you. You're number three. And in my head, I'm like, I wonder what the first two were like.
Yeah.
You know, there's a 99% chance in the first two, the person did not get up on a whiteboard. It probably didn't add any value. And at least in one of those, they were sold a product in the first
meeting.
So, like, it's, again, sometimes they tell me, sometimes they don't. But I'm always, the challenge is, how do I be an experience that is different than if they're interviewing one or five or 10 other advisors? How do I be a different experience? It's always in the back of my mind. And I'd like to think we do that.
Yeah. Yeah, when I went through this training, and I get this feedback from advisors too, that they come and they learn something to apply to new people. Like, this is for clients going forward. And we've been convicted even legacy of like, wow, we've developed this new future client experience that the next person we get, it gets this new us. That I've been convicted this year, it's like, no, we need to go back to our current clients and re-explain ourselves. We need to reset expectations, because there's a chance we've become complacent with them. There's a chance the meetings we have with them are pretty average. And so we're going back through and saying, okay, how do we better prepare for surge? Let's be more intentional that when a current client comes in, we even exceed their expectations by re-explaining what a financial plan is, by reminding them the stuff we're working on. Did this stuff we teach at the event, and for everybody listening, if you haven't been, we'd love to have you in Nashville or, you know, any of our private events, is that there's a way to reframe yourself to secure and get more referrals by exceeding expectation for your current clients.
You haven't mentioned it yet. I think one of the best tools I ever took away was the first time was either mail it to me or send it home with me, which was the Iterate to Elite, Average to Elite scale.
Yeah.
And we use it with my team. I've got two support staff in my office, and we just finished up Surge January. And we always go back to this iteration of, okay, how do we do? How are the client responses? Even existing client meetings, like, how was the client meeting? Was it average? Was it elite? How do we get better? We would kid ourselves, and I hope I say this in 30 years, that we've made it, right? Or we've peaked, or we're as good as we're ever going to get. Like, that is danger zone. And the moment you think you've perfected something, you go iterate it on a whiteboard, and I guarantee you, you make it better if you follow Sten's rule, which is, you've got to work on it five times, right? Five ideas to get to at least your decent idea. We love that tool.
Yeah, it took me a while. I guess maybe back in the day when I was younger, I felt like all my ideas were great until I started to realize, like, no, my first one's usually not that good. You know, like, version five of that, if I can sit in it, is always better. And I think there's something about an industry that gets satisfied with pretty good results, you know, versus having a bar of like, no, if there's something great just beyond the good, can we sit in it long enough to find that? So we're definitely passionate about that. Well, brother, I appreciate you, man. Dude, I love you. Have a great practice. For whatever reason, you are choosing to pour into Edward Jones Advisors. I bet people say, hey, man, you don't have to do it, but like, leading is in you, which I appreciate. So appreciate all you're doing.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. It's a blast. Hopefully we'll be back again for a third round of How to Charge Line.
Came on. Thanks, brother.
All right. Appreciate it.